And I looked around my industry and I thought, like, no one's really using video, particularly here in the UK, in the packaging industry. Like, content marketing is quite basic, sort of stuck slightly in the past, or maybe it's not moved with the times. And I thought, we've got a real opportunity here to be quite differential. When you look around at our competition, what they're doing online, I thought, mm-hmm. you know, we can actually, a really effective way for us to market ourselves would be with content marketing.
Hey, it's Billy Montes on Packaging Unboxed. Today, we're talking to Joe Purcell. He's the owner of Packaging Answers. And what does Packaging Answers do? They make packaging, they distribute packaging. But one of the key things here is how he built his business to making $1 million a year this year and how he's planning to get to 20 million in the next few years. You're going to get three key things out of this episode. One is the importance of social media and actually building your brand as a packaging company. Two is the importance of actually giving information and providing information without having to be asked. He is posting videos weekly where he's answering some of the most basic questions in packaging. What are MOQs? What is a folding box? All these different things. And he's getting into it in detail and he's showing and sharing. And these videos are getting tens of thousands of views and it's bringing in customers. That's the key thing. Give and you will receive. The last thing, number three, is how he's looking to build his business in the future by bringing on a key hire that I'm going to bet you or anybody that you know does not have in their packaging company or their packaging agency. This key hire is somebody that's going to bring a lot of business, but you would never expect it. This is not somebody that you would expect. And it's important for you to find out why that person is going to make a big difference in this business. Before we jump into the show, check out specrite.com. They're going to help you figure out all of your specifications and manage all your specifications, especially if you're talking about sustainability and for some of the new laws that are happening around the planet. If you're looking to buy packaging, check out idpdirect.com, packaging direct manufacturer of packaging for luxury brands and retail brands of large volume. Check them out, idpdirect.com. And of course, my friends, the people that I use all the time, packdora.com. Check them out. If you're looking to make die lines for any kind of packaging and have 3D renders created for you instantly, the snap of a button. So check it out, packdora.com. Let's get to the show. Awesome, man. So, all right. So today we got Joe Purcell from Packaging Answers. I didn't meet Joe, but I found Joe on LinkedIn. You're making these videos and it's called Packaging Answers and you're just explaining like just simple things on packaging. But tell me about these videos. What's the goal here?
Our company's just coming up to like 2.5 years old. I mean, for the first 12 months, we didn't even have a website, which is just insane, really. And I thought, man, if we've come this far, really with almost no marketing at all, imagine what we could do if we marketed a bit. Yeah. And the thing that really lit me up, actually, I retained a business coach, a guy called Tim, a year ago, and he introduced me to Marcus Sheridan and his book, They Ask You Answer. Mm-hmm. This is an approach to content marketing that focuses on your customers' friction points. If you can offer them the education to remove their friction points, and they're more likely to purchase from you. And it really lit me up, that book. I'd recommend anybody who's interested in any form of content marketing read They Ask You Answer. And I looked around my industry and I thought, like, no one's really using video, particularly here in the UK, in the packaging industry. Like, content marketing is quite basic, sort of stuck slightly in the past, or maybe it's not moved with the times. And I thought, we've got a real opportunity here to be quite differential. When you look around at our competition, what they're doing online, I thought, mm-hmm. you know, we can actually, a really effective way for us to market ourselves would be with content marketing. We committed to the process to start making videos. I think we're on our eighth video now. It started off with, like, I want to do one a week.
How's that going?
So I only missed 1 week. but then the next week I made two to make up for it. It's been cool, man. Like, we've learned a lot. I feel like there's a long way to go, but I'm really pleased. And it's great to open up opportunities like this with you to kind of spread more our word, kind of what we're doing.
So that's what I've heard, right? Is like, in not just in the UK, but just in Europe in general, content marketing isn't what it is in the US, right? In the US, like, everybody's got a YouTube channel. Everybody has, like, you know, a blog. Like, it's insane here. Like, it's just, but in Europe, it's like, no, you don't necessarily want to share so much online, right? You guys have GDPR and, like, privacy is really important here. People are like, hey, look at my dirty underwear. Why do you think that is?
You know, I think in our country, like, it's become quite inward looking over the past decade or so. And you're right, there's I think there's a level of kind of privacy, and there's a level of kind of there's like a conservative mentality, like a small C conservative mentality that says, like, let's just get on, and like, we're in our niche, and almost like, let's not tell anybody what we're doing. Like, and when I look at, like, a lot of what our competitors do, the way that you say LinkedIn, you know, it'll be like a photograph of a new recruit stood outside the factory, right? You know, and it'll be like, welcome, Ben. It's his first day at XYZ packaging company. Yeah. Or, you know, my favorite's kind of like, you know, once a year, the stood around the novelty check. You know, it's like we donated, you know, £1,000 to the local food bank. Or like, and I just think, like, what are you actually trying to say? What's the message that you're trying to give with that kind of content? All I really want to do is I just want to frame Packaging Answers as an expert. You know, we know so much about packaging, and we got so much relevant knowledge, particularly in secondary packaging for gift sets. And do you know what? In the last video we put up, I described myself as an expert and I inwardly cringe. You know, I was like, oh no, I just described myself as an expert. And then you've got your kind of British, like, stiff upper lip thing. Come on, don't crow about yourself here. And then on the other side, I've got like, but you are an expert. It's okay to say you're an expert. And, you know, we just want to frame ourselves as experts in this space. And share our expertise, educate as many people as possible.
I had this conversation with Brandy Parker here in the US, who she was part of Pearl Fisher. She's like, but you are an expert. You know, she's like, just because you're an expert doesn't mean that you know everything. It's just that you know how to find the answers, right? She's like, you don't have to contain all the information in your own brain. It's, yeah, you need to know a lot, but you also need to know what you don't know and who to find it from, right? And that's the part where many people are out there and they're like, well, I don't know where to get this information. So they ask you and you're like, oh, it's this, or, oh, you know what? Let me connect you for this person, or let me ask this person, and you bring the information.
Yeah, sure. I think it's really important to surround yourself with a good team of advisors. And I think that, and it's interesting, your point is particularly important to know what you don't know. It's important, I think, to be sure of your facts and to be speaking. If you're speaking as an expert, that's fine. And then I feel like businesses of our scale, we can be kind of more reactive than larger businesses. You know, I think that when you look at kind of, you know, if you think about like the 90s type corporate video, you know, that would be passed through like marketing and legal, and then and they get a voiceover guy to do it, and you know, and the whole thing would be constructed. Whereas we're in this amazing space now, Avelio, where, you know, you can, what we've made here is a small studio. You know, we're able to create, you know, high definition imagery, good sound, nice lighting. And you can just pop that camera on. And, you know, when you record these things, it maybe takes 2 hours to make a 2-minute clip. And then you can then distribute that to, you know, on a platform like LinkedIn. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I know we were joking just before we started talking, but the videos we've put up have tens of thousands of views now. And, you know, there's no possible way for a business like mine to have spoken to that many people. And, you know, I probably won't, you know, I won't speak to that many people this year separately. So it's incredible. It's just, you know, it's just an incredible space to be in. And especially when the competition are doing something that's so kind of different to what we are, it's really easy to stand out, I think.
All right, Joe, you've been in packaging for like 17 years. 2 years ago, you launched Packaging Answers. So how does somebody create a business like this out of nothing? What's that first step that you take?
The first step that we took was we needed, do you know what you do, Avelio? You get in the bath. you get in the bath and you shut the bathroom door and you have a really good think.
And then you cry. Yeah.
When I'd had a really good think in the bath, I'm looking at it and thinking, there's a booming drinks industry here in the UK and Ireland. Like, the fastest growing spirit in the world is Irish whiskey. My feeling was that I felt that there was a gap for a business to service that market where that's traditionally underserved by the kind of the traditional UK packaging manufacturer. And so I needed to test that. I don't know what it's like where you are, but there's thousands of craft spirit brands here. Like, these companies want really great packaging, but they don't necessarily know where to get it. Maybe they go to like the local box company. Maybe the local box company doesn't specialize in the type of packaging that they want, that they know that they need. And I just thought there was a gap there. So what I really needed to do was to meet some people, meet some potential clients in this space. We found a way to do that. We started having conversations. I had a friend who was really well connected in that space. And I asked him if he'd introduce me to clients. And we set up 20 calls in 1 week. And we just talked to people and we said, look, what are your problems? What problems do you face? And they come back to you with, MOQ is a problem. Like, we're always being asked to buy more than we want to buy. And then how do we really know that the people we're buying from, these brands, they know, particularly like owner operated brands or, smaller companies, they know the game they're playing. Right. And you're going up against like Bacardi and Diageo, so you know that you're playing on the same surface as these guys. You know, the kind of implied quality of the secondary packaging that you need. Maybe your local box guy, maybe he doesn't do that. Maybe he doesn't understand the way that you need him to understand. And we just felt that there was a space. We were right that there was a space. Our business has grown quite quickly. Really my view was that kind of for 18 months, we didn't have a website. We didn't do any marketing at all. And I just thought, right, it was all referral. And then I just thought, how do we push this onto the next level? And I thought, well, if we tried a little bit with the marketing, imagine what we could do. And that's really what's brought us to content marketing in these videos.
2 years ago, you just started meeting people. You booked 20 calls. You didn't have a website, but was it called Packaging Answers from day one?
IDPDirect.com. Perfection comes from the source. As the luxury packaging manufacturer, they ensure the highest quality right from the start. Buying direct means no middlemen, no delays, just pure, uncompromised luxury packaging crafted with your brand's needs in mind. Discover the power of direct at IDPDirect.com.
What happened to that beginning?
Yeah, sure. So the business was always called Packaging Answers. So the business was set up by my father. Mm-hmm. He retired 7 years ago. And my the first 5 years of his retirement was like me kind of clinging on to, his clients and his kind of business practices and the business that he designed. And my feeling was that I always feel bad when I kind of criticize how the previous business was, because we wouldn't be here now without it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But there was a lot, I don't think the business model was right, it was right for then, but it wasn't right for now. The kind of clients we had were right for then, but not really right for now. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to get into drinks. And I think that's largely because, in that market, it's the shelf price of these products is higher. The aspiration for the packaging is higher. Kind of the cost per unit is higher. So there's more opportunity to be involved in more premium products.
You have this transition from your father's business. You go through, several years of trying to maintain those customers, learn the business. Yeah. Then you've got COVID. It's that bath time. And it's like, all right, we're going to pivot. You're forced into that pivot. At that point, do you have, how many people did you have on staff during that stage?
It was just one. me and one other. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Okay.
Now we are five.
So just to recap, right? You've got this time with your dad, transition. Now it's Packaging Answers. Essentially, you're kind of starting from scratch because you're shifting in a new direction. It's you, one other staff member. What's the first client that you get on your own, and how do you do that?
I'm not sure I remember specifically the very first, but there's a couple of clients here because, as I said, we set up kind of 20 calls with drinks companies in one week. And obviously, if you look at your 20, then maybe, that 10 is not a good fit. Five, there's no opportunity. Three, there's some opportunity down the line. Two, there's immediate opportunity. That's kind of the rough kind of numbers that you'd expect on something like that. And of those first two, both are still with us, which is great. One's like a regional gin producer here in the UK called York Gin. So they're based in the historic city of York. Mm. And I really love their brand because I love brands that are aligned with places. Like, York's a big tourist destination as well. So there's a bunch of items in their mix that kind of works really well. And York gin, they knew that they needed to improve kind of the level of their packaging, but they didn't really know how to do that themselves. A big part of their business is e-commerce focused. So we did a lot of work making sure that kind of the packaging integrated both for sale through their retail stores, but then also for e-commerce as well. We made the products kind of standard sizes, and then we created outer cases. So more or less whatever a client ordered through the web shop could be kind of jigsawed together into a box. Yes. That they could then ship. That's been quite successful for them.
All right. So if we go back again, it was you and one other person when you started taking on these clients. What was this? What was the role of this other person?
I was like a general operations role. So that other person was.
And you can say their name if you want to. I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. So at that time, it was just me and Karen. Okay. And Karen's been with us 7 years now. So she's kind of lived through the change. And at that time, we needed somebody else, really. Mm-hmm. You know, we even needed another person just to legitimize us as
a business. Yeah.
A business, right? Because, you know, there's a lot of, I'm sure it's the same way you are. There's a lot of guys with like a laptop in a bedroom, and they're kind of, you know, a couple of clients brokering packaging. And, you know, we're very different to that now, you know, by our scale and our, you know, the credibility that we've built, you know, like we have insurance. And, you know, and now we've got 5 staff. And it's, yeah, so Karen's really kind of seen the change with me. So really at that point, Karen's head of operations now, but really then she was just helping kind of administrate our orders. So an interface with our suppliers, making sure that, you know, deliveries were on time and that our paperwork was ordered and kind of quite low order tasks like that. And a general admin role, really.
Okay. So it was you and Karen kind of running operations, but then your first client, you were talking about like creating the pack inside and the outer packs and being able to jigsaw that. So who did the conceptual stuff and the structural part? So if somebody wants to create a business today in packaging, creatives like suck at all the process. So you need like a process person. So I'm assuming, are you the creative? Are you the one that was developing these, or did you have somebody else do that?
So look, Emilio, like I can't use the CAD software, right? I can't work the CAD. You know, I can't work the plotter table. But I can do a mean drawing of exactly what I want on my pad and pen. Historically, in this area of the country, there's been quite a lot of packaging manufacturing in the kind of Yorkshire area, which is the county that we're in. And there's still, even now, there's a lot of little businesses, and we were connected with a couple of kind of small, independent kind of designers by the hour, really. So initially we used services like that, you know, and extensively, you know, because you're right, you know, I could do the conceptual design. I can say what I need. And at that time I could specify that part, but I couldn't do the drawings or make the samples. So we outsourced that to local independents up until the point that our business became more successful and we were able to bring that function in-house, at which point we have Lee now. So Lee's our head of design, and now he does all of the drawings and makes all of the samples.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. There's so when Lee does something amazing, like the next time Lee does something and you're like, fuck, right on, Lee.
Yeah. There's
an amazing song for Lee. It's by Jack Black's band, Jack Black and Kyle Gass. And the name of the song is Lee. And you got to just blast it. Yeah. You got to just blast it in the office. Lee's going to love it.
I promise. He was here just before we started recording. Yeah. And it's a shame we didn't know that. If the meetings were the other way around, we'd have definitely played it because he did something great today.
But all right, so again, it's like if you're creative, you're gonna suck, you know, I hate to say it, but you're gonna suck at all the process stuff, right? So you need somebody that can handle the process. Most creatives also most creatives aren't the greatest salespeople either, because they're typically a little bit more introverted, kind of thoughtful in like what they're doing. And I always say, like, you know, if you're a designer, you have to learn how to sell.
Sure.
Right. So you're
the face. You're out there, you're pushing. Karen's behind, like supporting and helping and helping build this. So you're two of you freelance designers. That lasts for a little while because you've only been around for two. Yeah. At that stage, you've got your two clients. You know, what can somebody like really expect to earn, right? Because you're a young guy, you got a company, you've got staff. Sure. People are like, oh my gosh, this guy's rolling in it. But like, what's the reality?
Right. So I think as a business owner, it was challenging. There's no doubt. Right. And financially challenging, and the financial challenge like persists to this day. As you know, as we get bigger, the financial challenge just seems to also get bigger. Like what was it that Biggie said? When we started, we were reasonably lucky that we had some funds, because you know, there's kind of probably a lot of people at home thinking, well, I can design packaging. Like, how do I turn? Is it financially viable to turn what I know into a packaging business? How do I sell that? And one of the things that, you know, I'm 38, right? So I started this when I was sort of 36. There's a long life ahead of me there. You know, I'm married, I have a daughter. You know, there's a lot of kind of financial responsibility. In some ways we were lucky. You know, we got our first orders really within a few weeks of the pivot. You know, I can remember going home to my wife and being like, Rachel, look, you know, we got it. almost with like the printed out purchase order, right? Look, we did it. It's going to work. And I remember, you know, in the first month, at the end of the first month, I'd be like, hey, some small number, tens of thousands of pounds of orders here. And then maybe each month it kind of grew and it grew. And I'd say, you know, we'd have our target, right? You know, I knew the amount of money that we needed to make in the year to pay me, to pay my staff, to pay our tax, to pay our insurance, to pay our rent, you know, the operating costs of our business. And we'd look at it, and every month I'd go home and I'd say, look, we're this step closer to making it. And then actually, probably about 9 months in, you just notice like you're having the conversation less. You know, the conversation about how much money we made this month, it reduces because it becomes less important. Because, you know, it's a really common analogy that, the business, it takes a lot of effort to get it going. But once it's rolling, it starts to make its own momentum. And, you know, when you're counting it in and out every pound and pence you're spending, you know, that takes a lot of effort. But once that stone kind of gets rolling and you kind of think, okay, well, maybe after 9 months, we had made the amount of money that we'd identified that we needed for the first year. So then you're in a position where you think, oh my God, this the next 3 months, that's kind of beyond what we needed. And we can start building for next year. And you take, you know, within, like as a responsible business owner, you take those additional profits and you think, right, what's the next step? How do we reinvest this within our business? So we spent money on branding and website. We moved to better offices. We employed extra people to kind of plug the gaps that start to appear. You know, as your enterprise becomes larger and more successful, you think, you know, you're laid in bed or in the bath, and you think, oh my God, we've got this kind of yawning gap in our business and we need to plug it ASAP. So, you know, I've been involved in packaging 17 years and my technical knowledge is good. You know, my technical knowledge of printing and paper is strong, but I knew that it wasn't totally enough. So we brought in a technical manager I'd known for a long time. And it's nice because, you know, you're able to bring in, or we were able to bring in people kind of from all walks of life. My technical manager, I've known him a really long time. Mm-hmm. He's kind of at the other end of his career to me. I think his next career move will be retirement. And his availability, you know, he was stepping down from a role in a much bigger company and he was looking for something smaller, less intensive. But we were able to offer that. And, you know, we're able to take those amazing kind of the amazing technical resource that Neil is, you know, use that to our advantage, but it's also great for him. And so I think that to come back to it, like stepping out the bedroom, you know, to take those steps, right? You know, there's no doubt you have to be lucky, and there's a large amount of luck has happened to us in our business. But I also really a big fan of that phrase, you make your own look. And the other phrase I'm really happy, the other phrase I really love is that the harder I work, the luckier I seem to get.
Exactly. So, you can't wait. You can't wait for it to happen. You got to just make it happen.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think if you're sat at home thinking, can I do this? Then the only advice, although I think the best advice I'd give from the seat I'm sat in now is just go for it. Try, like, you know, just try. Why not? What have you got to lose?
Yeah. But time, right? One thing you've got to lose is time. Well, if you don't commit to taking that step, right? If you don't take the step today, you're going to kick yourself in the ass for not having taken it, you know, years ago.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was kind of lucky that I was kind of forced into taking the step. You know, the pivot that we had to make was forced on me. You know, I didn't want to go get a job. You know, I didn't, that wasn't in my plan.
Yeah.
You know, I'd always done something entrepreneurial and I wanted to keep doing that. You know, that part really turns me on. You know, I love working in Packaging Answers. You know, I love the kind of entrepreneurial spirit where we can, you know, we can make our business do more or less whatever we wanted to do, and kind of what we wanted to do is such an interesting question.
And that's what's funny, right? So that goes to like the next question. You've gone through like you've gone through this like startup phase, you've gone through the challenge, you know, you've come through to the other side. Tell me about this next hire that you're bringing on to a packaging company.
Yeah, I can't quite believe what we're doing next. because I don't think there's another packaging company in this country that has the same hire that we will have, because I'm going to hire a full-time photographer, videographer.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited. There's so much great stuff to say in packaging, Avelio. And, you know, there's so much story to tell. And, you know, we're in a world now where the best storytelling businesses are the most marketable businesses. And, you know, we want to, with our content, we're just looking to reduce the friction in that a potential client would have to in dealing with us.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to explain as much about packaging as I can, because I think that clients now, they don't really want to be sold to. I think that they want to feel like or be empowered to take the best decision that they can for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, if you're the one putting them in that position, then you're putting yourself in the best position for your ideal clients to come to you. I think I talked a little bit about Marcus Sheridan at the start of the recording of his book, They Ask, You Answer. One of Marcus's lines is about being a digital David and kind of fighting corporate Goliaths. And, you know, I feel very much like that. You know, I want to be a digital David, or I want Packaging Answers to be. You know, how many times do you get asked about MOQ, right? It's the first question everyone comes to. I want to ask, you know, how many times do you have to have that conversation? Well, I want to answer MOQ in detail, and I want to give the best answer on why does packaging have an MOQ? I want to give the best answer ever, and I want it to be on my website, and we're going to do that supported with video. You know, I'm super excited. Can't wait to get to start telling the story of packaging.
You mentioned being a digital David. So who's your Goliath?
Oh, that's fighting talk.
Who do you look at like every once in a while and you're like, oh, bastards, right? You know, like, I'm gonna crush these guys.
I always think, right, the analogy I always use is as the race car driver. And, you know, if you just look at the race car in front of you, they're the only one that you're ever going to overtake. You need to be looking down the track. There's a business in this country called Hunter Luxury. And they're like a 20 million turnover business that's specializing in cosmetics and cosmetics packaging. And I look at the way that, you know, they have like 30 people work for them. And I look at when you go to trade shows, I look at their stand and I think, damn, that's a potential future for Packaging Answers.
Nice. I don't know. I always felt that it was important to have like a nemesis in the business. Right. Where you kind of, I don't know, for me, I spent time in the military, and it's like always good just to have like a target. And even if they don't know, the problem is that they don't know it, right? They're not like, oh, this guy's, you know, these guys are looking at us. We're in a race together. No, it's like, you're in a race, but you need somebody to be like, okay, I've got to take them down.
It's good to see what the future could look like as well, right? Because, you know, I don't know every step that I need to take my million-pound business and make it into a 20-million-pound business.
Right.
When you see somebody who has done that, you know, okay, they're also 20 years down the line from me.
Right.
So if you look at the steps that they've taken over that time, like, what can we learn from how they go about things? And actually, you know, when you look at, not necessarily Hunter specifically, but when you look across like the UK packaging market, when you look at what lots of those larger companies are doing, I just think we can be way more reactive because of our size. And I think that because of the way that the sales landscape here is changing, I just think it presents such a big opportunity for people in our position to say something really differential and, you know, to really kind of outmaneuver some of these kind of old big boys. And they've had it their own way for too long, right? So maybe it's time to disrupt that a bit.
No, I really appreciate you kind of breaking down the startup, right? This is a 20-year startup, right? Right. This company's been in business for a long time, but over the last 2 years, it's taken a big turn, big pivot. That's like the most exciting part, right? Like, running a $20 million business is exciting for its own reasons, but being at this like challenger stage is so much fun. It's like, what are we going to change today? What are we going to do differently today? And the fact that nobody else is out there doing the videos that you're doing is awesome. And of course there's going to be the copycats, right? Once people go, oh, hey, this guy, this, you know,
right. isn't that exciting?
It is exciting, but it's also, you know, irritating, right? Because you're like, damn it, I was here first, right? Because like, you're gonna be making like the videos that you're making are great. That's why I called you. I'm like, or that's why I reached out to you. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. Sure.
Yeah, but I think that the what we're doing will be difficult to imitate, and there's no doubt. You know, I'm not going to be conceited enough to say that we're doing something that's like unique and uncopyable. It is. There's no doubt it's copyable, but I feel like in this space at the minute, we've got some first mover advantage.
Yeah.
And it's interesting what you were saying about having a nemesis that you want to go after. I kind of feel like I think I'm motivated in the other way. And maybe I have people that I want to stay ahead of. And you think, okay, you might be trying to catch me up, but what inventive step am I going to make now to stay ahead of you? I'm not sure which is the more healthy mindset, actually. I think it might be yours.
I don't know. Mine's more combative, 100%. I don't know if that's healthy, but... You know, as long as it's kind of the same. It's like you just want somebody to beat, right? It's like sometimes you just need that personal motivation to get you going. And it's also a great way to develop new ideas, right? If everybody's kind of going in the same direction, it's like, all right, how can I zag and get out of the way and do something completely different, right? So like, I mean, 100%. Like one thing I would always do is like, what is this group of people doing? And they're all doing like the same thing. Like, all right, what's the complete opposite thing, like what should I not be doing? And then I would go and just jump on that.
Do you know our when you look at the content that we make, our most watched videos are the ones where we talk about price, because nobody talks about the price of this stuff here. And you know what's amazing, when you start talking about price to clients, the what you hear more often than anything else is, oh, that's cheaper than I thought. Right. Wow. Yeah. How wild is that?
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, you're right. Nobody talks about price.
Why not? Because let's talk about price all the time.
See, but that's just it, right? That's exactly it. Nobody talks about price. So what should you do? What's the one thing that you should not do is talk about price. All right, go and do that and just double down on that.
Also, right, there's an element, if on every sales call, right, if somebody asks you about MOQ and you're just wasting your life effectively, right, you're wasting your time and their time explaining, say, MOQ over and over and over and over again. So maybe how much of a better position do you put yourself in where you say, here's this beautiful, well-produced video where I explain in detail in a way more considered. Now, how many times I probably talked about MOQ twice today, right? But whatever that mental speech is, you always deliver it slightly differently, and in a less considered way than you would do if you were creating a piece of content to explain why packaging MOQs matter. You kind of give the half-baked, off-the-cuff version of the MOQ mm-hmm. speech. But if you could just point that person to a piece of content that says, because everybody wants to know, right? All of the smaller clients that we want to deal with are going to want to know about MOQs. And hey, guess what? My business is really well set up to deal with lower MOQ projects. Like, I actively want to sell to clients that have been put off by the MOQs of other packaging companies that they've spoken to. So, because, you know, we've taken decisions in our supply base and in our design to be able to make, you know, relatively small volumes of really nice stuff. And so if I create a piece of content, or if my business creates a piece of content and we put it online and we say, here's the XYZ or the ABC of exactly what MOQs are and why they matter. And then that client can go and view that piece of content. I never have to have that conversation again. And they're getting the best version of that explanation every single time.
I appreciate the videos that you've made and, you know, accepting when I reach out to hop on here. I think this has been really interesting. If anybody wants to go and watch your videos, where are you posting these things? Where should they find you?
So all the videos that we're making are posted to LinkedIn. We upload a new video every Friday at 8:30 GMT. So you can get that on my channel. You can find my LinkedIn at in the video description. Otherwise, you can look at our company website, which is packaging-answers.com.
Awesome. And then they can find you, Joe Purcell. And I'll have links to your LinkedIn page as well as your website.
Yeah. Search for me on LinkedIn at Joe Purcell. That's awesome, P-U-R-C-E-L-L.
But you're not, all right. So are you posting these videos on YouTube as well?
No. Should I?
Yeah. Are you posting these videos to TikTok?
No. Should I?
Yeah. Are you posting these videos to Reels?
No. Should I?
Yeah. 100%. If you're going to make the content, and when you get a videographer, I think this just rolls into part of that, right? It's like LinkedIn is a great area. LinkedIn is amazing, but people are looking in all these other areas as well. TikTok is like the second or third most used search engine for answering questions. And the fact that you're answering questions is like perfect.
Yeah, sure. And I know that YouTube is the second largest search engine.
Yeah. And YouTube and TikTok are at this point kind of like neck and neck. But that's where it's getting. So definitely, if you're creating the content, spread it.
One of the things we're going to do when we're interviewing tomorrow is, first of all, Avelia, I'm going to employ somebody really young.
100%.
Yeah. I'm going to employ someone who's like 21 max. One of the interview questions is tomorrow. I've sent them all my LinkedIn videos. Mm-hmm. And I said, pick one of these. How do we rework it for TikTok? How does it need to be different for TikTok?
Yeah. So, and why should somebody hire somebody young today? Why are you hiring somebody young in this space?
No, I got a great answer for you. Right. If you want something truly creative, you need to hire somebody really young, because so I'm 38, right? And I'm already battened down by, when I'm asked that question of creativity, I'm already battered by, can we make it? Can we afford it? You know, you've got all of the weight of experience telling you all of the things that you can't do, shutting down all those avenues that you can't walk down. And the reason why you should employ somebody young is because they're unencumbered by all that stuff. Mm. You should employ somebody young because they're going to give you genuine creativity and like a why not attitude. Why can't we do this? Of course we can do this. That's why you should employ someone young.
100%. And they're going to know how to use all the TikToks and the YouTubes and all that stuff. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're going to know what nobody's using, how to use it, what's popping. Did they say that? What's popping? I don't know. Kids these days.
I don't know. I mean, I can try it out tomorrow and see how it goes.
Awesome, man.